So maybe a first question would be, give us a state of just your tribes.
Madison has just been designated in December, Truax Field, as the home of F-35A.
Doctor, can you start? Give us an overview.
Senator Mark Miller of Monona, as a Democrat, has represented the 16th Senate District since 2004, and before that, he was in the State Assembly, and he's announced that he's not seeking re-election this year. So, Senator Miller, this is an exit interview. Thank you for doing it. I really appreciate it. Why did you decide this is kind of enough?
Well, Steve, as I just learned a few moments ago, you also are retiring.
Well, that'll be at the end of the year.
And you've been around for a long, long time, as have I. You know, I served, I have served 22 years in the state legislature, and before that I served 30 years in the Wisconsin Air National Guard. That's a total of 55 years of public service. It's a long time. And as you know when it's time to retire. You know, I'm 77 years old. I'm experiencing some of the frailties of old age, which limits my creativity and enthusiasm that I feel is necessary to do a good job as a state, as representing the people. Mm-hmm. I still would like to do a few things that I've postponed all these years that, I still have some vigor left in my body to do it.
I understand. You and I are meeting in very interesting times. We are socially distanced. We could not do this in your office because we couldn't maintain social distance. What is it like being a senator in this COVID pandemic time, sir?
Well, as you know, the COVID restrictions emerged in February, and the statewide restrictions happened in March. Our office immediately went to working from home exclusively, which works out pretty well for a legislative office, actually. We meet every day, every morning. We have a staff meeting, review the telephone calls and emails that we receive, determine how we can help those constituents, assist them, respond to them in an appropriate way. And with the benefit of the internet and emails, and we've been able to do a good job of that, being very responsive. A lot of the things that we've had to deal with, of course, are the consequences of unemployment as a result of the pandemic. Unemployment insurance being at the very top of that list. There's been a number of limitations that were imposed over the last 10 years on being eligible for unemployment insurance. And there's a lot of people who are applying for the first time. If you make a mistake, it just really slows down the process. And some people have waited for months. So the heartbreak of some of these folks who are just barely hanging on, in some cases not hanging on, you know, they are being evicted from their homes, they are having their cars sold or repossessed, they're worried about how their kids are gonna go to school, what's gonna happen. There's just all kinds of challenges for the general population, and our offices hear about that. And we try to do the best we can, but it's challenging. We had a virtual session.
Right.
Then one virtual session.
But there wasn't a whole lot of debate.
Well, and that was, I think, that concerned me. And we have raised concerns. Senator Bealey, the majority leader, and I, as the caucus leaders, raised our concerns with the leadership, saying that this was not an acceptable way to run a virtual debate. People who wanted to be recognized were ignored, and that needs to change. I've talked with the Legislative Technology Services Bureau. Can those changes be made that need to provide that transparency, and say yes they can, but they would like to have a bipartisan go ahead, saying that we both agree that these changes are appropriate for a transparency like you would normally have when you have a normal legislative session on
and
the floor.
With all the give and take and all the debate and everything, the personal interaction is what this Capitol has run on,
right.
And there's very little of it now when all of it is done online. It seems to me that the Republican leaders have decided we're not going to have a budget repair bill until after the election.
Yeah.
So if we're still under the same health restrictions for the pandemic reasons, then your last day as a state senator voting on bills maybe online on a budget repair bill. Do you hope that there's more give and take, more dialogue
if there is that online session on a budget fix-up bill?
I hope so. We've made those recommendations and hope they will be acted on. I think the Senate President could do it on his sole authority. A lot of these shortcomings were not anticipated when the program was put together. It was put together in a hurry. It was not anticipated how it would actually work in real life. But they need to be done in order to have a virtual session that closely approximate what you would have if you were in person.
How worried are you that if the governor's right and we're $2 billion with a B, shortfall in general fund, are you looking at cutting school aids and health care and aid to the UW, which may not have revenue from sports? I mean, it's a very interesting and difficult time, potentially,
well,
isn't it?
The primary decision makers on this will be the Republican majority in the legislature and the governor. I don't think we will have a budget repair bill unless we need one in order to respond to additional federal legislation. And if that legislation requires action by the legislature, or if it is deemed that we need to do something to be able to appropriately handle whatever might come from the federal government, then we'll have a session that will not only deal with that, but perhaps deal with the budget as well.
What are your thoughts on Governor Evers never really got a honeymoon from the Republican leaders, and he's had a pretty difficult 18, 20 months. Senator Fitzgerald at the Republican convention said he was a reluctant candidate and not up to the job. What's your assessment of Governor Evers?
Oh, that's not true at all. I mean, I think he, coming from a lifetime of service in the education community, is that he was very distressed at the fact that our schools were declining and eroding under the former governor's leadership and the Republican leadership, you know, continued cutting to faculty and staff and educational programs, both at the university as well as the K-12 level, and shifting more and more public dollars to private schools. Really was a guiding principle that I think guided him to run for office. I don't think he was reluctant at all. I think he felt passionate about the importance of education in the state of Wisconsin.
Can he establish some rapport with Republican leaders given the unfortunate phone call incident and things like that? That seems to have them not dealing very honestly or cordially right now.
They weren't before.
Okay, fair enough. Legacy. What would you like to describe as your legacy?
Well, I would like to describe my legacy having championed environmental protection in the state of Wisconsin. It was not the primary reason that I ran. The primary reason I ran was when I was a small business employer, I was very troubled by the fact that my employees' health insurance was dependent on how successful our company had been. And I was in real estate, and that fluctuated dramatically, if you can remember, back in the 70s and 80s. And I felt this is not the way you should have health insurance delivered to your population in a civilized society. And so I primarily ran to try and change the dynamic on how we fund and provide health insurance. You know, I was an advocate for universal statewide health insurance that was funded through a payroll tax that was exactly what Harry Truman had proposed, and it was what Earl Warren had proposed when he was governor of California. And it is a way of doing that, but we had to do it in a way that didn't eliminate current private health insurance if people wanted to do it, and that is part of what it has given Obamacare. One of the challenges is that there was a promise you could keep your health insurance. Well, you could, but it had to depend on your employer keeping that same health insurance. And so when employers change as a result of the dynamics of Obamacare, people blame the program. But it turned out to be very popular. You know, I was the primary author, along with a number of other Democratic senators, of Healthy Wisconsin, which got attention around the country for the way we crafted it. But it was not adopted here, and it was not adopted in any other state as well, although it was introduced in other states. But when the Affordable Care Act passed, I felt we needed to take a look at that. And my second passion was protecting the environment. I'm an avid outdoors person. I hunt and fish. I camp. I canoe. And but I have long recognized the importance of protecting the really valuable water resources in the state of Wisconsin. And so that's where I focused my attention. And I've introduced a number of bills, none of which have passed, some of which I worked on with Republicans to get partially passed, but to deal with managing our water resources. And I think most significantly, the Clean Energy Jobs Act, which came out of Governor Doyle's task force on the climate change. And the Democrats were in charge then, but we could not get it over the hump. We lacked the votes primarily in the Senate with Senator Decker and Senator Plaley.
Well, there was a package of clean water bills that the Assembly passed that the Senate never considered just this year because of the COVID crisis. If you're only coming back on a potential budget repair bill, all those bills will die, right?
Yes, they're dead.
They're already dead.
Okay.
Those bills are
dead.
They could be revived in some way.
No, the only way they could be revived would be reintroduced if they were included in the call for a special or extraordinary session.
So is the environment that was your second priority, is it in better shape now than when you joined the legislature? Or given the headlines over PFAS, a very dangerous and insidious toxic chemical, we are more at risk from an environmental standpoint?
Well, Wisconsin was one of at the forefront of a number of environmental laws back in the 60s and 70s, and so we benefited from that. But quite frankly, in recent administration, you know, particularly under the Walker administration, we cut back on the staff at the Department of Natural Resources. We loosened regulations. But there are some things that were done that are very significant. One of them is the standards for particulate pollution in water, a federal standard that we have adopted, and that has resulted in some parts of the state working cooperatively across government and business and the PSC to get a reduction in pollution on a watershed basis, which I think is really something that needs to be done. We can only really manage the water surface water resources if we do it on a watershed basis.
So in Wisconsin environment is in better shape the 22 years that you've been in the Capitol?
I would say yes.
Okay.
But it could be a lot better.
Understand. You know, you were the Senate Democratic leader in Act 10. Was it your idea for the 14 of you to leave and go to Illinois?
I actually learned about that this was a possibility from a member of my staff.
Okay.
That this was that a fiscal bill required a what they call a fiscal majority, supermajority, required 20 senators in order to be able to act on a fiscal bill. Act 10 was a fiscal bill, required 20 members in order to have a quorum to act on it. Yes. The Republicans, who were in the majority, only had 19. Yes. So if all the Democrats agreed not to appear, not to show up, they did not have the quorum in order to be able to pass that bill.
So the goal was to delay the bill, but it was to defeat it.
The goal was to defeat it. As you remember, that bill was dropped like a bomb. That was actually Governor Walker's term. He dropped it without any advance notice. He hadn't campaigned on it. It just, boom, you know, shortly after
he wanted it passed, I think, within 10 days. Through both
Well,
houses.
it was basically 4 working days from the day it was. I mean, you take out the weekend, and the day it was dropped, went through public testimony, and then they cut off public testimony in order to be able to take it up promptly. And they were concerned that the public opposition and editorial proposition would end up killing the bill. And that was our hope too. But if it was done so quickly, that opposition might not have been able to materialize. Particularly, they had cut off. You know, there's over 100 people waiting to testify when they cut that off. So we figured the only way we could provide space was to deny the quorum.
Okay.
And then we were dumbfounded at the really explosive reaction that it got both at here in Wisconsin as well as nationally and internationally. And I thought we really were turning a corner because of the public enthusiasm or the public outrage over the legislation, but it failed to result in a substantial change in leadership.
You 14 were in Illinois for how many days? Do you remember?
I don't. Roughly? It was close to 20, somewhere around 20
close
days.
Close to 20.
Yeah.
Did you consider that a success?
Well, we accomplished the goal, which was to highlight the what was in the bill and to raise public awareness and to delay action on the bill. But the fact that we didn't succeed in stopping the legislation, I'd have to say it was not a success.
How did you feel that Saturday when the protesters who didn't like Act 10 greeted all 14 of you when you came back to the Capitol? But it was, as you said, after the bill had been signed into law.
Right. The bill was finally signed into law by splitting it into two bills, taking out the fiscal parts and just passing the policy parts.
Because if you took out the fiscal parts, all you needed was a simple Senate majority.
That's correct.
Which they had, although Senator Schultz defected, but still 17-1.
Right.
To 1.
Right. And
18-1.
Right. So that welcome will be one of the lasting memories of my life, especially my legislative career, because walking through the crowd as we surrounded there was 100,000 people here, and we were led through the crowd by a bagpipe band of the firefighters, which is kind of a stirring thing in itself, but there was people that reached out wanting to touch us with tears rolling out in their eyes because of what we signified to their hopes and aspirations. And to me, that was, I'm getting goosebumps just remembering it, Steve, because it made me realize how important what we had done was to so many people in the state of Wisconsin. And it made me reaffirm my determination to try to continue to live up to that expectation and those aspirations. But it was very, very moving.
But you didn't list that as part of your legacy. You listed your work on healthcare and the environment, but you're proud of what you did with Act 10,
leading
your 13 peers.
That is a tactic that should only be used in the most dire circumstances.
Didn't Senator Cullen then introduce a constitutional amendment forbidding it? Anyway, that's.
I don't remember if that was the case, but.
Okay.
It should only be used in the very rare circumstances. It should not be part of our normal. Tools, but it is a tool that has been in place for centuries in terms of a parliamentary body.
And I think you just said you would do it again, correct?
Under those circumstances, I would do it again.
Lessons learned that it's a tool used rarely, but...
We did it really on the spur of the moment. And if I'd had to do it over again, I would have liked to have been able to do a little bit of advanced planning, but...
Yeah, like
that was not an option available.
Pack up some clothes and stuff. And the Senate chief clerk was sent to your house with police officers from the Capitol Police.
That's right, he was. I saw that on television. Afterwards, I called up the chief clerk and said, well, if I'd known you were going to show up, I'd have asked you to bring my mail in.
Okay, so you were really touched by the greeting that Saturday.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Okay. How has the legislature as an institution, a third part of state government, changed since you joined it? You were elected in 98.
Well,
in the Assembly.
You observed this, Steve, is that what changed is the demand for partisan adherence to the partisan agenda and ideological purity. There are interest groups who, on both the left and the right, who demand absolute fealty to their particular agenda, and who will undermine, or who do not appreciate that this is a body that requires compromise in order to be able to move forward, particularly in a body that is in a state that is as evenly divided on a partisan basis as we are. Our history has been seldom have we had one party in control, except for very brief periods of time.
Look at the example of Ron Johnson and Tammy Baldwin. Right. Polar opposites, excuse
right.
me.
That's exactly right. And the but since the 2011 redistricting, that's not been the case. We have had 10 straight years of Republican control, and even though we've had more people voting in some of those elections, more people voting for Democratic candidates than more votes being cast for Democratic candidates than for Republican candidates, but it's not been reflected in the legislature. So the partisan gerrymandering of legislative districts has, I think, really changed the dynamic a lot, because there's no longer a sense of sort of fair play of serving democracy. You know, when I was first elected to the Senate or to the legislature, there were a number of Republicans with which I could collaborate on a number of issues, depending on what their interests were and what my interests were. Senator Ellis and Senator Schultz were among those that they would not have tolerated the abuse of the democratic principles that involved in the kind of partisan gerrymandering that has occurred. They basically believe that there should be a fair playing field where you compete on the basis of ideas and organization, and not on the basis of sort of tricking the system into benefit your party. When people lose confidence that their votes will make a difference, they end up in despair of the political system or the economic system if they feel they don't have a chance to make a change.
Over your 22 years, you've watched the evolution of social media. What effect has it had on the legislative process and the election process?
There's been both good and bad. It's certainly improved the ability of public officials to communicate with their constituencies, but it has also fostered the anonymous attacks on public officials, on fellow constituencies. I no longer read any of the comments after press articles because they're just too foul. They're not the things I want to think about when I think about our state, our Wisconsin, our citizens. I prefer the kind of dialogue that occurs where you actually know who you're talking to and where you have some degree of civility in that discussion and respect for the person that you're talking with. One of the things that I really regret is that there has been more and more space created between legislators of the two different parties. We don't get together for a baseball game, we don't get together for picnics, we don't get together to celebrate various occasions together. There's no social contact. It's all in the business. So if I had anything to say about what new legislators should do, it would be to just go out of your way to try and create a trusted relationship with other legislators on both sides of the issue. Do not let the way that we are currently organized that leads to the isolation between colleagues. And we should be colleagues. You know, we should be able to understand and treat each other as decent as human beings. We should be able to understand and that we all represent our constituencies, in that we are not evil. We're not, you know, that there's a, we at the core of us, most of us who have been elected, are not evil. We just differ.
Isn't another big change that you've seen the growth of big money and third party groups?
Yeah.
I don't know how much you spent on your first assembly election, but it must have been only
a fraction
of what your 2016 re-election cost, right?
Well, I didn't have an opponent in 2016.
Okay, excuse me. And
in my district, after gerrymandering, was heavily Democratic.
Yes,
but
I remember what Senator Erfenbach said once: with third-party groups, I, as a candidate, lose control of my ability to run a campaign, because I don't know what's out there, either from a third party group supporting me or attacking me.
That's right, and that's why Senator Erbenbach and I have both been really strong advocates for transparency on who's contributing money and to whom and where it's coming from.
Okay. Just a couple more questions. What's your advice to your successor in terms of?
I knew you were going to ask that question, so I have been giving that some thought, and I wrote them down, Steve.
Okay.
I wrote them down here.
Excellent.
I said, one thing is, remember that your family comes first, and that your family has to sacrifice a lot in order for you to be successful as a in this political world. I mean, they have to put up with you not being home at nights. They have to be up with, being up with you, being attacked in the public, sometimes very viciously. They have to put up with sometimes being afraid of an attack on their own safety. They have to be concerned about their children in the classroom sometimes, because the kind of splits that we have will sometimes happen. That happens. So your family has to come first. Make sure that you're dealing with them, and that they get a piece of your time and a piece of your affection. You know, that would be my main thing. Is keep life balance in place. And the other one would be something that I just talked about with is to devote yourself to building a trust relationship with other members on both sides of the political aisle. If you know what has motivated them to run, if you have an appreciation for their background and experience and their motivation, you might find that's very similar to yours. And that commonality of experience, maybe you were both in the military, you know, maybe you were both school teachers, maybe both you were outdoors people, you know, make the effort to try and find out who your colleagues are on a personal basis and establish that trust relationship. And I think it's particularly important for new legislators, because your classmates, your other new legislators, have not been contaminated yet by the environment that has been prevalent here. They, like you, are new people. They're learning the ropes. If you learn them together, that relationship can continue for a long time. And that happened with me, is that we created a freshman caucus. We exchanged ideas. We learned a lot about each other. And those relationships continued. Eventually, Scott Jensen said that his members could no longer participate in that. But the little bit that we did had long-term benefits to both us as well as to the Republican legislators who participated in it. I think be willing to forego credit, be willing to share it at least, and then even be willing to forego it. If you're in the minority, recognize that if you're willing to forego some credit, the policies that you might want to pass may have a better opportunity to succeed. Really important is to hire really good staff. We depend on our staff. They are our eyes and ears and voices. And when you hire good staff, give them opportunities to gain additional skills. Two of my staff people got master's degrees while they were working for me. I gave them time that they could devote to their studies that would be counted as staff time. And they have gone on to do really good work after they left my office. My communications director gave her additional training in communications, and she's been just outstanding on that. And so these are the kinds of things that I would encourage. And along in that is never stop learning. attend national conferences. Encourage your staff to attend national conferences. Get to know the truly outstanding legislative support agency staff who are incredibly good, have seen a lot of this before, and can be a tremendous resource to being successful. And, you know, having and treating them with the kind of respect that their talents demand can go a long way. I get to know the Capitol Press Corps.
Capitol Press Corps, which is no longer
there. So they know,
here.
So that they're comfortable in contacting your office, respond to them, you know, when they call and ask for your input. This should have been at the beginning, but it says, put the interests of the people above the party or special interests. We sometimes get so inundated with party interests or special interests that we forget that we're here to serve the people. Recommend becoming a specialist in a policy area. A tactical thing is at the start of each session, write down your goals for that session, and then design a plan to accomplish those goals, and periodically review that to see how you're doing.
You're giving a seminar. Some people would charge a lot of money
for this seminar. That's the problem, is I wrote these down, Steve.
No, I appreciate that.
I couldn't remember all of them.
One final question. You and I were saddened when the June protest tore down the statues because we worked here decades. When the president says that those protesters in Portland and even Madison and some of our larger cities are anarchists and terrorists, how do you respond?
I don't know how you respond to our current president. He has done so much to divide our country. Usually you look to the president to be a uniter, to call us to our better angels. This president has done just the opposite, and it's reflected in the broken policy we have with respect to the pandemic response. It's been represented in the way that he's chosen to create conflict where violent conflict had not been before. It is a political ploy. It is so contrary to good leadership that I cannot wait for this election so that we can move on to something more constructive. We need it as a country. We need that as a country. We cannot continue to have this kind of feeding the beast with respect to dividing our country into evil and good the way that has been done.
Senator Mark Miller, Democrat, representative of the 16th Senate District since 2004. Thank you for a very thoughtful interview, and good luck in retirement.
Well, Steve, same to you.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
This program is a production of Wisconsin Eye, an independent, nonpartisan, nonprofit media network with a mission to inform, educate, and engage the citizens of Wisconsin. Wisconsin Eye is the nation's first and only independently funded state civic broadcast network, providing gavel-to-gavel access to government proceedings and events at the state capitol.